wherever you listen throughout the world. It's football time.
And welcome all back to another episode of the Gridiron Guys. We have finished up week 12. Now we have moved the recording date. Not that that's going to matter because it's a podcast and you can consume it however you like. That's the beauty of this thing. But we are now moving to a Tuesday, so we will be a little bit different with what stats we can bring you and things like that, just to accommodate myself because I am an FC at the moment and training is absolutely flogging me, especially after the couple of weekends that I've had sipping on some sweet juices out at the wineries and, you know, relaxing back on a few vegan lung flutes. But anyways, aside from that, Cam, how are we going this week?
Yeah, look, I'm sounding better than you. Your body's sounding a bit worse for wear. But yeah, look, we're good. We'll move to a Tuesday, proper down on Wednesday, and we're good.
Absolutely. More content for you guys, for the members. That's what we're all about. But look, shall we get into it? Week 12 kicked off with an absolute, you know, Thanksgiving, I don't want to say barnstormer, Bears v Lions. It was close, but, you know, it was tight at the end. And I think for me, it really just epitomized Lions football at the moment, especially with the amount of penalties that they pulled out of their ass.
Oh, yeah, disgusting. Like, was this the game that was, I think it was Raiders Cowboys that was one of the most heavily penalized. But yeah, what was the error that was made right near the end by the Lions that cost them?
The double timeout. So for those who are not aware, if you call a timeout and then try to call one straight after on the same play, you give up a 5 yard, which ended up giving Chicago a short 5 yard. So I think they were at 3rd and 9 before that. So they could have quite easily stopped them, potentially, you know, had a chance to get the ball back for Detroit. However, gave them 5 yards for free. They convert an easy 3rd and short and then go and run down the clock and kick the field goal to win.
Oh, it's crazy. And I suppose that epitomizes, like, when you used to talk about the Browns back in the day, now the Lions, they just find ways to lose. Like, they're not necessarily that bad every week. They just find ridiculous ways to lose, and it just seems to keep popping up each week for them.
Well, that's it. It's just ill discipline. You know, on the offensive line side, there were so many holding calls. It was just ridiculous. You saw there was a couple of times they got some great starts to drives. They'd roll in, get maybe 20, 30 yards. But then when you give away 3 holding penalties in a row, you're back where you started, and then you've got to kick again. So you get no field position at all.
No, absolutely not. And I suppose we'll just continue to see the Lions go on the winless season. I know they jagged the draw, but can they just pull one out?
Geez, I honestly thought they might have this week, but you look ahead, they play the Vikings, who probably, you know, pretty decent considering they're only sitting at 5 and 6, but they've lost a fair few close ones. They travel to the Broncos, so they'll get absolutely flogged in that game, no bias. Then they have the Cards, the Falcons, the Seahawks, and the Packers. So, look, potentially the Falcons and maybe the Seahawks, just their current form at the moment. But other than that,
yeah,
season's not looking too great, is it?
No, I feel sorry for Dan Campbell. Like, I've said this before, he's a decent coach. Goff isn't it. But, yeah, look, I think you're right. Like, I reckon you could almost pencil in Seahawks as a potential to win that game. Things are looking shaky there. They've lost 4 games for the first time since Russell's been there, I think.
Yeah, well, 4 games in a row since he's been the starter. And also, yeah, he's never had an 8-loss season as well. So, look, the wheels are falling off quite quickly there. They lost today. Maybe we'll touch on that before we get back to the Cowboys, hey? Heineke, he's managing to pull through, doing anything just to get a win, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's carrying this team when no one else probably thought he would. Like, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we didn't expect much from at the start of the season, went down. You're like, oh, shit, Washington's absolutely stuffed here. But they've managed. I mean, they're sitting at 5 and 6. It's not the best record in the world, but with what they've got available, I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, and considering their division as well, they're actually in the hunt now. They're in the wild. They sit in the wild card spot in the NFC. Look, they had a great game from Gibson, over 100 yards as well. So, you know, don't discount that. He led the way pretty well. And considering as well, they lost their kicker in the start of the 3rd quarter to a hamstring, I believe. So that actually forced them to go for the 2-point conversion, which put them up 17-9, and then ended up forcing Seattle to go for that 2-point conversion at the end, which they were unable to convert with the late interception.
Yeah, that was huge, that last play. That was wild. I suppose the big thing I took out of that game is DK Metcalf's kind of fallen off a cliff, hasn't he?
Massively. I think we all love him. I've loved him seeing him play. Like, he's great down the stretch. You look at those long bombs he can keep up with, and he's just an absolute beast. Don't get me wrong. This kid is jacked. But is he a proper wide receiver? There was always talks about that in the draft and things like that, and his route running and those sorts of things. It's possibly leaning towards that. Is he lost a bit of the connection with Russell Wilson as well, considering he was actually not too bad with Geno while he was there. But ever since Wilson's come back, he's been absolutely dud.
Yeah, it's daylight between his previous years and this year. I know Seattle struggles are massive all across the park, but yeah, he kind of needs to step up and do a little bit more. I suppose looking at Russell Wilson here, we just talked about him having his first four losses in a row in the first eight loss season in his career. Now, I think is his contract up at the end of this year? There is rumors of him heading to the Big Apple to the Giants.
Wow, that could be an interesting one. Yeah, I think, look, a bit of a replacement for Jones. I think the Giants are pretty much done with him, aren't they? I suppose looking at the Wilson situation, especially after the offseason that they had, it was sort of, you know, umming and ahhing whether he was going to go or he wasn't. But then he signed on. He said, no, we've got the team to do this. On paper, yes, they did. On the field, though, they haven't. And I think, you know, he's going to probably kick up a stink again because he almost did last year, and that was, they were actually decent then. Now look at him. He's going to, why wouldn't he kick up a stink?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, look, he's got every reason to sort of bail and get out the back door. I know we'll talk about the coaching carousel of college later on, but the USC job is now filled, so we might not see the Pete Carroll reunion that we talked about last week.
Nah, that would have been cool. Very nostalgic over there, wasn't it, back in the day when the Trojans were flying high. But that's all right. Pete runs another day at Seattle. But what other games caught your eye this week, Cam?
Look, we've probably got to talk about our two teams. Probably different games for both of us. The Ravens, Lamar having the worst day of his career, I believe. Four interceptions. I mean, you can't put all the blame on him, but it was easily his worst game. The picks weren't great. He had a lot of very much, fuck it, Mark Andrews is down there somewhere, let's just toss it up. Andrews has caught one that was absolute ridiculous. But it was our defense. I think both defenses were on fire, like just cleaning up Baker and cleaning up Lamar. But like Ravens defense finally stood up when they needed to stop the run game. And I think they only had 40 yards for one of the best run games in the league.
Yeah, the pressure was outstanding. It just really put absolute, oh, like you just watched, especially considering, I know you guys won, but your line just got absolutely torn to shreds by Clowney and Garrett. It was ridiculous. I don't even think you had snapped the ball and they were already straight through your line. There's so many holes. But credit to Lamar. Yes, he threw four interceptions, but he only got sacked twice that whole game. And he was pressured I don't know how many times, but the amount of his evasiveness was ridiculous. The amount of times I just saw someone bearing down on him and he managed to jink them or run around them and get a pass off, he saved so many drives. It was outstanding.
Yeah, I think that's where you got to take the good with the bad with Lamar. Like, I know he's thrown those four picks, and that's the worst he's done, but he does get sacked a bit. But the pressure, like, if you're looking at the offensive line, as you've just said, the pressure that gets to him every single game, and I know the Miami Dolphins sort of set the blueprint with the zero blitz, so there's going to be guys coming all day. But, like, Villanueva and a few other guys on the line are just absolutely terrible, and I'm kind of glad TJ Watt is on COVID reserve this week because that could be horrible if he plays.
Yeah, he would have absolutely monstered you guys, so... But I think the other thing that showed was that in the close game, Baker still is struggling, isn't he? He is not able to deliver at the end game. They had sort of multiple chances towards the end in that fourth quarter to potentially, you know, draw level or something like that. But because what was it? It was 10-13 for a long time there, and they just could not produce a drive. So, but credit to the Ravens, they kept the clock moving and kept them out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think towards the end of that half, I think there was five turnovers in the space of 3 minutes. So, I mean, it wasn't pretty football to watch. For your Sunday night football, it was a very mediocre showing. I suppose the biggest thing for Baker is he sort of bet on himself and didn't get that big contract in the offseason. And I think the Browns are going to be pretty thankful that they didn't pay him. I reckon they could potentially move on and look to draft someone else.
Yeah, not too bad, actually. We have sort of talked about how this draft is not going to be, you know, a high one for QBs, and there may be some sitting around that mid to late 20, not 20s, but mid to late teens type thing. So
yeah,
potentially you can still have a season in the playoffs and jag a nice QB.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's going to be some talent that's going to be a bit further down the board. Now, we'll move on from the Ravens stink and we'll go on to your boys, the Broncos, who were absolutely flying the last few weeks.
Oh, baby. Yes. This was a hot one, wasn't it? AFC West showdown. We are keeping it tight. This division is absolutely as close as you could get, really. And it was nice to sort of get a nice little tiebreaker over the Chargers. Teddy Bridgewater again, doing Teddy Bridgewater things, doing what he needed to do, only 120-odd yards and a TD. But the work was on the ground game. Jeez, Gordon and Williams are just ridiculous. Oh. Like, Williams is such a nut trucker. Have you seen how many guys that bloke carries over the game line? It is so good to watch. Holy shit. But on the defense, that's where it was won. My boy, Patty Surtain, coming out, delivering like we wanted him to. I know I probably threw a bit of shade on him when we picked him up at the draft, only because I knew that this team needed a QB, and maybe I was blindsided by the beautiful rose-colored college glasses of Justin Fields, who was available. Thankfully, we didn't pick him up. Those rose-colored glasses have shattered pretty quickly for Chicago, but for us, Patty Surtain, we've got an absolute throbber that's going to be there for the long haul.
Yeah, oh, look, I think that pick's going to pay dividends. It's a safer pick, and rightfully so. I think that was great. He handed the ball to his dad after he'd taken it to the house, which I think is just brilliant. But, yeah, your offense is humming. You've got some, like, other than Bridgewater, who's doing a good enough job. Like, I know Drew Lock came in for a little bit, but, yeah, the weapons you guys have, especially that 1-2 punch in the running backs, oh, it's just brilliant. And I suppose you've also got Bradley Chubb back, I see, coming back soon. So your defense is only going to get stronger.
Yeah, no, it's hot property. And as I sort of said, this is going to be good because towards the end of this year, this AFC West is quite tight. So you're looking at the moment, the Chiefs, after their slow start, they're sitting at the top at 7-4. Then we've got Chargers 6-5, Broncos 6-5, and the Raiders 6-5. So it's literally anyone's game at the moment.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on the Chargers, actually? Like, I know people rated them pretty highly, and Herbert's still really good, but there's just seem to be having issues. They're losing games we probably thought they should win. So I'm not really sure. I'm not sold on them, but I don't really know. I haven't watched enough of them to really get a gauge.
Well, I think what I've sort of seen is they've never really been able to blow anyone out this year. So you look at their last couple of games. So they've lost to us. They beat the Steelers by 4. Then they lose to the Vikings by 7. They beat the Eagles by 3. Then lose to the Patriots by 3. And then the week before, that's when they got decimated by you guys. So they've pretty much kept everything quite close. And whether it's been low scoring or high scoring, they've never been able to dictate the tempo, I think, for me. So they're sort of just there in for the ride. And then either they manage to just pip them over at the end, or they're not able to do enough to keep them out of their end zone just to finish off the game.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair summation, because I guess if you look at this team on paper, like top to bottom, they're pretty bloody good across the park. So, I mean, I know your division's tight, and I think the finishing down the stretch for you this division is going to be the best one to watch in football.
Yeah, can't wait. A couple others in the AFC, though. We did see another big AFC North, which is going to change your division a lot, the Steelers and the Bengals. Cincinnati's back, baby. Mixon absolutely rolled through the Steelers, and Joe Burrow is just, you know, looking like the guy, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, they're looking. Well, it's a weird one because Bengals are such a hard one to read. They were sitting at the top, made their way down after a few losses, and then they bounce back with a game like this, and you say, well, geez, they're back in contention. That's an absolute blowout of the Steelers, who are a decent team.
Yeah, they put the squeeze on Najee Harris. He only managed 20-odd yards. And you got to think, Roethlisberger, that was almost the nail in his coffin.
Oh, yeah, the decline is happening and fast.
Yeah, so look, Bengals tight. I think let's have a look at their standing. So, again, yours is going to be quite close. Let's have a look when it loads. So, you've got you guys sitting up top at 8-3, Cincinnati 7-4, Browns 6-6, Pittsburgh 5-5. So you're literally, there's a space of two, three games separating you from top to bottom as well.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is the Bengals have played a fair few division games, and I think they're sitting 3-1 while the rest are sort of sitting 1-1, 1-2 around that sort of mark. So I think if they're going to get a few wins and stay even with the Ravens, they could get them in that tiebreaker.
Absolutely. A couple other games I think we want to touch on, probably the Bucs v. the Colts. This was an outstanding one. Fournette and Taylor battled it out, but also Wentz and Brady. So Wentz, managed to get the topple off. He did throw 2 interceptions, but got over 300 yards and 3 TDs against a pretty handy Tampa Bay defense.
Yeah, this was a cracking game, and I suppose it's good for the Buccaneers away from home. They're really good at home. I think they're undefeated there, like the Packers, but it's a good win away from home. And probably the play of the game for me was the Antoine Winfield intercept. I think I saw today that it made, like, I suppose when you look at win probability, they're talking percentages. This one made a 17% change in probability of who was going to win the game. So I think that was just such an enormous play for such a little guy over the top of Pittman, I believe.
Fuck, that's big, isn't it? Then we had also the Patriots are rolling through at the moment, aren't they? They decimated the Titans at home, 36-13. Mac Jones is a killer. Bill Belichick's done it again, hasn't he?
Scariest team in the AFC for me at the moment. I think this isn't the team you want to come up against. And, I mean, if they keep this train rolling, Mac just keeps it rolling and the defense just blitzes the shit out of everyone they play, I would hate to play them come January.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous how they managed to just work this team together. There's no iron team. They're all coming together. We love it. Titans obviously looking a bit shaky without Henry. They did have a great running game from Hilliard, but I think as you can sort of see with Tannehill, he was absolutely bugged down. He didn't even get over 100 yards, and he threw for an interception. You can just see if he doesn't have that backup of that superstar helping him out, he's not able to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Any games that caught your fancy finally, just wrapping this one up?
Probably the only one for me is the Dolphins are starting to catch a bit of fire. They've won the last four, and they've got a pretty easy stretch coming down here against a few sort of easier opponents. They started the season slowly, but geez, their defense is lit up. Jalen Phillips is playing really well for a rookie. And I suppose the only other thing is Cam Newton, 5 for 21, 90-odd yards and 2 intercepts, and he got dragged. He was horrible.
Yeah, look, life comes at you fast sometimes, doesn't it?
Oh, boy, did it.
Yeah, so look, that was a bit rough for him. I think we sort of mentioned that Cam Newton came out and he didn't really do much. I know we gave him a flying the other day, but it was just more for the fun of it, just for the two TDs. It was quite good to watch, just that short stuff. Mm-hmm. But we sort of thought PJ Walker has looked like the guy recently, and he's quite handy.
Look, for sure.
He did okay. He ended up throwing an interception, but when you're coming in late game and a defense is humming like that, it's hard to get anything going, really.
Oh, isn't it? Yeah, he was sort of put behind the eight ball there and did a serviceable job. But, yeah, the Panthers are stuffed now with no CMC, I believe.
Yeah, agreed. Righto. I think that wraps us up, and we shall move into some awards for the week, starting off with Rookie of the Week.
Righty-o. Rookie of the Week for me. Now, I've just talked about the Miami Dolphins, and I'm going to go with the rookie wide receiver, Jalen Waddle. Has, I suppose, coincided with their four wins. Jalen Waddle has caught fire the last 4 weeks. 29 catches, 346 yards, and a TD over the last 4 weeks, which gives him 77 catches for the season. I think he's the second most behind OBJ through 12 games by a rookie, and a total of 759 yards. So I guess there could be an argument for him at the end of the season to be the best rookie wide receiver alongside Chase. Chase has kind of slowed down a little bit. I mean, he's still a gun and he's put up huge numbers. Waddle is just super consistent, and I think it's helping to his game to a huge degree that he is sort of breaking out.
Yeah, absolutely. On my end, I can't even look past my boy, Patty Surtain, too. As we sort of mentioned, great game by him, game winner. He ended up with 5 tackles, a couple pass defense, 2 interceptions, 1 for a pick 6, baby. Read it like a book all the way to the house, and it was stunning.
Yeah, that was glorious by him. And I think when you sent me, that was one of the photos of the year. You've just got Drew Locke pointing to the house, Surtain streaming away. I just love that photo. That's brilliant.
Oh, it's just vibes, isn't it? So we got around that. So we'll get onto those on the socials. Moving on to our team of the year. So because we finished up our lineup last week, we're going to sort of shake it up a little bit and find a couple other, some new guys that might be able to take the place of the old guys. So we're going to put it to you. Essentially what we're going to do is we're going to put up a offensive player and a defensive player each week. And we're going to compare stats with the current position person. And we're going to get you guys to vote.
Yep, love the sound of that. Yeah, so look, I'll take offense this week, and I suppose we can alternate each week. But I think for me, we've got Derrick Henry currently sitting at running back. And I think with his injury, it's really unfortunate for him because I suppose his season would have continued on the same trend, I believe, and it's really hurt the Titans. But I think there's one man that I can't go past. He's pretty much the Colts offense, Jonathan Taylor. So for the season so far, 209 rush attempts, 1,205 yards, 5.8 yards per carry, 14 touchdowns. And he's also been pretty good in the passing game, 36 receptions for 336 yards and two TDs. So that gives us a total of 1,500 odd and 16 TDs. So I think, look, I will pin him up against Derrick Henry. I think Jonathan Taylor probably takes the cake for me there in terms of because he's played all year. But I think that we'll just leave it up to them.
Yeah, no, he's killed it, managed to get across, and he looks like he's going to seal up that rushing award this year. For myself on the defense, I have gone Jordan Poyer, the safety for the Bills. Now, he is going up against PJ Williams of the Saints. So throughout the year, Poyer has racked up 44 tackles. He's had five interceptions, which puts him tied third in the league. And he's had eight pass defense compared to PJ Williams' stats, who's had 17 tackles, three interceptions, and five passes defensed.
Yeah, that's good. We love when the boys are just racking up those big numbers. So, look, yeah, we head to the socials tomorrow. We'll have some votes for you. And, look, we'll replace some guys on the offense and defense throughout the season for the next, 7 weeks or so?
Yeah, about that. Ready to strap on in for it, isn't it? About 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yep, can't wait for the end of the season. We're getting close. Like, it's getting pretty exciting. Now, I guess moving on to flying and dying, who has been flying for you this week?
Yeah, look, it was hard to go past the big dog, Jonathan Taylor. You look at his last eight games, he has been absolutely ridiculous. He has scored in every single game he's played since week three, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he's had a multiple score games. And I think it was 6 out of his 12 games this year have been over 100 yards rushing, which is just outstanding. You mentioned he's 1,205 yards, which is first in the league, 14 TDs, which is first in the league as well. He averages 5.8 yards a carry, which is second in the league, and he's attempted over 200 rushes, which is second in the league as well. So he's the big boy. He's got Wentz strapped on his back, and he's going to carry him all the way to the playoffs, I reckon.
Oh, Jonathan Taylor is just immense. Now, I remember when he was playing, I believe, at Wisconsin in college, and he was in line for Heisman. I put a bet on him because I thought he was just unbelievable for them, breaking all sorts of records. And now he rushed a game for 400-plus yards, I believe. And he's just – I'm so glad he's transferred this across to the NFL because he is such a good player.
Yeah, Badger Nation pretty well known for pumping out some good RBs, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got one yourself in Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, the man. All right, who was flying for you this week?
Look, we're going to stick with the running backs and probably on two fronts for this. Leonard Fournette, or as Gronk likes to call him, Four Tutty Net. I guess this guy got us 44 points in fantasy, so we can only thank him for that. But this game, I guess, was, as you said, played in the trenches and played between the running backs. Jonathan Taylor was bloody good, but looking at Leonard Fournette, 17 attempts, 100 yards, which, I mean, he doesn't normally crank out huge yards on the ground, but three touchdowns, seven receptions, 31 yards, and another touchdown. So he finished with four touchdowns and over 130-plus scrimmage yards. So, look, he's been absolutely flying. I think he's in playoff Lenny form at the moment.
Yeah, and the game winner too, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, hard to go past him.
All right, for dying this week, I have got one for the fantasy football fans. Looking back in August, the top six running backs for fantasy were Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, and Saquon Barkley. Now, you look at that list today, you have Christian McCaffrey is out for the season. Dalvin Cook is out for the next few weeks. They're not sure when he's coming back. He's dislocated his shoulder. Alvin Kamara has missed the last 3 weeks, and we're not sure when he's coming back. He's on our team as well. Derrick Henry is on injured reserve. Ezekiel Elliott has a heel injury, which looks like it's going to cost him a couple of weeks. Saquon Barkley is the healthiest of the six, and you don't even hear a whimper out of him at the moment. So, look, for fantasy players, it's been a dying time for some running backs, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been horrible, and I think we've sort of been a casualty of that. Kamara's not too bad because I suppose it's only been three games, and we're hoping Taysom Hill's back in the quarterback this week, and we hope Alvin Kamara can sort of come in and do a job. I think they're playing Dallas this week, so it would be nice to have him back in the lineup. But yeah, look, if you picked one of those guys early on in the draft, didn't go a wide receiver or something different, you'd be kicking yourself.
Yeah, it hurts. All right, who is dying for you?
Oh, dying for me now. This is a bit of a two-parter as well. Look, I've gone Jalen Reagor. Look, he didn't have the best of games. I know Jalen Hurts didn't have the best of games, but there were two passes at the end in the end zone or near the end zone that he's dropped. Now, I'm not going to just go straight for Reagor. I'm going to have a look at Howie Roseman under the microscope here. Reagor was picked up pick 21 by the Philadelphia Eagles, and the very next pick was a man named Justin Jefferson. Now, Jefferson set all kinds of records in his rookie season. And then this season, now Jalen Reagor through 12 games is 25 receptions, 201 yards, and 2 TDs. Comparatively, we've got 67 receptions, 1,027 yards, and 6 touchdowns. I think there's a no-brainer there that they've really butchered this one, and Howie Roseman is a horrible GM.
It's a no contest, really, isn't it? Jesus, that's about 1,000 yards almost in between the two.
Yeah, look, Meikle, I know he's furious at that decision. He was really pulling for Justin Jefferson, but the Reagor pick just came from absolutely nowhere for me in that draft.
Oh, super strange. But all right, so we'll get those up on the socials and we'll catch on to them. Now, speaking of Meikle, unfortunately, he's out with the geriatrics this week, trialing for the ACT Touch football team. So we got our fingers crossed for him. We know he's a chance to be a shadow player, but maybe he might be able to make the first squad this year. We're rooting for you, bud.
Yeah, he's been trying to tell me he's only 27 according to his South African passport, but we all know he's 30 next year, so poor fella's aging quickly.
So that's all right. We'll skip a bit of Meikle's Hot Minute this week, and we'll get into our Week 13 preview. Kicks off with the Thursday Night Football, as you sort of just mentioned, Cowboys v Saints, and Taysom Hill looking like QB number one.
Yeah, look, Cowboys have had a slip after the bye, as you've aforementioned, the last few weeks. And they really haven't looked like themselves. Now, Ezekiel Elliott, you just mentioned, is probably out with a bit of a niggle. Kamara could be back. I don't know how to pick this game. This is just an absolute wild card for me at the moment.
Flip of the coin, really. I think I'd probably lean towards Dallas just because we're not so sure what the QB situation is with New Orleans. As we said, we believe it's Taysom Hill. He was seen this week taking first-team snaps. Simeon was over with second team, which, to be honest, I like because Simeon has been rubbish lately. He's basically had 4 losses in a row. I think the Saints haven't won ever since Jameis Winston was dancing in crutches, so he may have accidentally cursed the team, but we don't want to read too much into woo-woo just yet, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, look, it's not a bad Thursday night game. I don't mind this matchup if the teams are going pretty toe-to-toe, but yeah, look, I'm not really sure. There's a lot more tasty games coming in the Sunday lineup.
Oh, God, yeah. What's picked your fancy to start with?
Straight off the bat now, we talked about Chargers earlier. We're not sure how they're going to be, but the Chargers-Bengals, I think, could shape up to be a really good game. Both, I mean, the rookie quarterbacks from last year are going toe-to-toe.
Yeah, so you got Herbert v. Burrow, the rookies, Eckler v. Mixon, Allen v. Chase. It's got it on all fronts.
Yeah, we're super excited for that one.
Yeah, moving on. There's a couple others. We've got the Colts v. the Texans, which could be a change of game, especially considering Texans lately with Tyrod Taylor, almost a brand new team.
Yeah, look, I think the Colts should probably get away with this one. Jonathan Taylor's the one that we're going to watch here because I don't know what the rush defense is like for the Texans, but I think we just see him go to another level this week. Colts win that one. I think they take sort of an ascendancy in the South. I don't know who the Titans are playing, but that's sort of one that's interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the season because the Titans are slipping down a little bit further.
Yeah, I think the Titans have the bye actually this week. Speaking of other teams, we've got Washington v. the Raiders, which could be just a bit of a defensive slog again. We've sort of seen these teams get into some dogfights in the trenches. Las Vegas probably taking the advantage over at home, but as we've sort of seen and we mentioned, Heineke and those Washington boys have just managed to scrounge something up. And I think with the Raiders, they haven't been able to put away anyone recently. And if they give Washington a sniff, they will just keep coming at their heels.
Yeah, well, you're kind of hoping that Washington wins this one too because it plays huge in your division. And I know looking further down, Sunday Night Football has got you matched up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I'm actually really excited for this game. Chiefs at home, you're playing lights out on defense. They've been struggling but getting better on defense. Now, I wonder what pressure you can put on Mahomes here.
I think hopefully if we can put on some great pressure and get to the QB, just force a couple sacks and we'll be able to get him to start throwing some of those passes, which he was throwing earlier in the year, causing a lot of interceptions because that's when he was at his weakest. If he was forced to throw and he made bad decisions under the pressure, we're able to get those interceptions. We can get those turnovers. We can start moving those into points and just working on that scoreboard pressure. And I think that's the way we're going to beat them because if we get into a shootout with these guys, we're not going to win.
No, I don't think you have the firepower at QB whilst they do. And I suppose you can kind of make Mahomes look human as he has this year. Before that, we thought this guy's untouchable, but he started to show a few cracks and that's fair. Look, people have slumps in their career and he's only had a couple of games and it was magnified because they really were battling. But I think they're starting to get that back together now. Now, looking, there's two other games that really take my eye. Ravens Steelers, but I think the game of the week for me has got to be Monday Night Football. Bills and the Patriots. Bills' defense is really good. Patriots' defense is fucking unbelievable. This is a huge game in terms of the AFC East and the AFC in general.
Yeah, you could almost say that this will basically pretty much lead to the top of the AFC for them and also the division. I think they play them one more time as well in a couple of weeks. But you're sort of looking at this. The Bills recently have sort of been on and off, and the Patriots have been going quite, you know, steadily higher and higher each week. So I'm not sort of sure. It depends what sort of Bills team rocks up. Hey, like sometimes these guys have gone out and got absolutely pantsed by teams. Like you look at the Colts when they played them, and then they lost the Jags only a couple of weeks ago. But then they come out and they will absolutely roll anyone in their way.
Yeah, I suppose that's the difference between the Bills from this year and last year is they're either getting blown out or they're blowing teams out. There's no middle ground for them. And the Patriots are very capable of blowing these guys out. So I think that's going to be a cracker at Bills' home game. This is going to be huge.
Yeah, love that. So week 13 looking like a huge one. We can't wait. But I think we're going to have to roll into a bit of college football because it's getting to the pointy end of the season. There's a whole lot going on in that sphere. Do you want to take it away? What do we want to start with? Do you want to start with the bowl games, transfers? Oh, mate, take your pick.
Oh, it's all happening. We've really gotten into the college football a lot this year. I used to like it a lot, but I think we've really started to get right into it. I suppose we can have a look at the games from week 14. There was a couple of games that really made decisions for the end of the season. I mean, we can have a look quickly. UTSA slipped one up in their perfect season. They've lost to the Western Kentucky. No, sorry.
North Texas.
North Texas. I'm looking one too many weeks ahead. they did lose to North Texas. Now, besides that, I suppose the biggest one this week, or two biggest ones this week, were Ohio State and Michigan, with Michigan getting the W, and Alabama and Auburn. Now, Auburn, Tank Bigsby, will be rueing the fact that he didn't go to the ground for the rest of his career, I believe.
Oh, that hurts, because all they gave him was the tiniest amount of time, and that's all that Bryce Young needed. Look, they hadn't done anything all game. They hadn't scored a single point till the fourth quarter. Auburn had them on the ropes. They were ready to go. And you just knew when they got that last TD, you said, oh, no, Alabama's going to win this in OT. They're going to get the ascendancy. They've got the momentum. But you wanted Auburn to outlast them because they almost had it.
Yeah, they did. And it would have been just such a huge finish for the season, because like looking at how the game's sort of shaping up now, we know Alabama is going to play Georgia this week. Georgia has only allowed 83 points for the whole season, and their defense has only allowed 69 points of those, which is freaking ridiculous. Now, if Alabama can take it to Georgia and keep it in a close one or beat them, they make it. If they lose, are they out?
I think so, yeah, because you're looking at the first potential two-loss team to make the playoffs. But I think just the way that Alabama's gone about it, they sort of took that loss to Texas A&M. They've had a couple of close games. You couldn't really say they've been a great two-loss team. If they took an L to like maybe 1-2, you could potentially make a case to slide them in at 4, but I don't think so, not at this rate. If they lose, they're out.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I suppose looking at the top 4 to top 6 this week hasn't been brought out yet. We're probably thinking, what, Georgia, Cincinnati too, do you think?
No, probably Michigan, I'd say, just with their win, might just jump over Cincinnati at 3. And then you're potentially looking at Alabama still at 4, then probably either Notre Dame or Oklahoma State on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good call wrapping up sort of that top 6. Now, then that probably puts us into these championship games that you mentioned before. Now, Oklahoma State play Baylor, and then Georgia play Alabama, Michigan play Iowa, Cincinnati play Houston. Those are probably the biggest matchups, I believe, for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you sort of look, the Pac-12 is probably not going to have any bearing on it. You've got a number 11 Oregon at 10-2 versus Utah at 9-3. Yep. So regardless of that sort of win, maybe it bumps Oregon into the top 10 if they win. But outside of that, it's not going to have any bearing. The Big 12 championship, this is probably a big one for those looking inside, especially considering you've got that Alabama-Georgia game. If they lose, they're probably going to come out if it is Alabama. So Oklahoma State 11-1. If they win and Alabama lose, they're a good chance to roll in, especially after their last week win against Oklahoma and stopping them from getting into the Big 12 championship game for the 8th or, I think, season in a row.
Yeah, something ridiculous like that. Oh, I'm so glad they're out. And I'm so glad, like, I suppose with all the Lincoln Riley drama, OK State has had a belter of a season, only slipping up once to Iowa State. Now, I suppose if there is a slip up in the top four and we say Notre Dame and Oklahoma State are 5 and 6, Notre Dame don't play a championship game because they're in the independent conference. And if Oklahoma State win, who do they put in?
Look, I suppose it's a risk, but you look, considering Notre Dame's only loss was to Cincinnati, it's probably easy to say that Notre Dame might go in first, but I can't blame them for putting in an Oklahoma State. If they come out and absolutely douche Baylor, I don't see why they don't slip him in, because they go, look, these guys went out, they throbbed, they deserve to be in.
Yeah, oh, I completely agree. I think that's going to be the biggest question mark on the CFP's decision-making, and I suppose it's going to get questioned a lot, as it always does, and I suppose people are going to be upset that their team hasn't made it. But I think Cincinnati, that's the one I'm worried about. Cincinnati, Houston. Houston have only lost, I think, in week one. And since then, they've been on an absolute roll.
Yeah, look, both of them have been lights out, essentially, in their conferences. You look at Ridder, he's rolled out over 3,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Then on the flip side, you've got Tune for Houston, who's rolled 3,013 yards, 26 TDs and 8 interceptions. So pretty comparable stats there. Running backs are both similar. McCaskill's ran about 850, but Ford's got over 1,000 there. Both similar, 16 and 17 touchdowns each apiece. But then you look on the flip side for the receivers, their top receiver, Houston's got Dell at 1,000 yards and 11 TDs, whereas Cincinnati's got Pierce at 800 yards and 7 TDs.
Yeah, this is the issue game for me. I think Houston could cause an upset. I hope they don't, because we see Mason Fletcher playing there and one of the Aussie boys, and we want to see an Aussie boy in the top four, hopefully make it to the CFP championship game. Now, I suppose you were talking before, and college football is going crazy. The transfer portal is going nuts with players decommitting from Oklahoma after the Lincoln Riley moved to USC, and the coaching carousel, what we saw Brian Kelly to LSU, and there's probably just going to be more and more happening across the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's quite a few people moving around. I know there's already talk about the Cincinnati coach potentially being looked at for an open job, and a few others. But I suppose, yeah, as you mentioned, the biggest domino was Lincoln Riley. So Lincoln Riley, yep, head coach of Oklahoma, just drew Oklahoma. Unfortunately, they lost to OK State for the first time in since 2014, I think it was. As you sort of mentioned, it was, they knocked off sort of 7 straight Big 12 championship appearances. They missed out on those, and now he's gone and defected to the Pac-12, the USC, literally today or yesterday. He hasn't even hung around for the rest of the season. He's packed up and he's left them, so they've still got a game to play. Now, multiple 5-star recruits. Oklahoma had what looked like the best recruiting class in the league, in the country. Multiple 5-star recruits have now decommitted. They're coming to USC, which is not too bad. Not sure yet, but... And now everything's just folding around Oklahoma. They're trying to go to the SEC, but they can't even win the Big 12. Like, it's not looking good for them.
No, it's going to be crazy. And I suppose I just can't fathom the fact that you leave, like, when there's still a game to go. I know you didn't get the championship game. I mean, his record's been unbelievable. But that deal that we saw from USC, now the numbers have sort of come out and been thrown around. But that is just huge.
Yeah, it's big money. There's obviously big money in Cali, but... And as they sort of said, they get taxed big, so they got to work on that. But they managed to find him a couple of big, nice homes. So I don't know. Maybe we need to go play work in college football. Money doesn't look too bad.
Oh, geez, it's unbelievable. I suppose, yeah, that's sort of wrapping us up here. Now, I think those games we mentioned before, so you can catch those this weekend. I think some of those games are a must-see. And then the top four come out tomorrow. So I don't think we're going to see anything too different from what we've discussed. Have you got anything else before we wrap up?
No, that's about it. We'll be back on the socials again this week. We know you missed us on the weekend, but as you said, had a bit of a bender. So it is silly season. Forgive us. But this week, we got the week off, so we'll be right on top of it and we'll be back on form.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for letting us in your crib. It's been real.